Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the anime action fan sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a very special episode of the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your Primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and this is an Absolution Network special on the 2013 E3 conference, the big video game conference that happens every year, where the latest games and the consoles, in this case, are revealed, including the Xbox One and the PS4. So we're going to talk a little bit about it, see who came out on top. And of course, for a epic episode, I'd have to have a very special friend to join me.
Very special.
and not the short bus special. That would be our other friend. But joining me is Titan X. Titan is a very good friend of mine. He joined me. I was part of his anime club. Well, not his, but we were part of the Tampa Bay Anime Club back when I lived in Florida. Which I joined, I believe it was 2006.
Yeah, it was about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I came right after Metrocon. We started when I first started joining, they were still in a it wasn't a Bennigan's.
Beef O'Brady's on the corner of East Bay and US 19 in Clearwater in Tri-City Plaza. It was right next to the Publix.
Yep. And then from there, of course, we ended up moving to, why am I blanking on it? Perkins.
Yeah, we moved to Perkins. We were at Titani for a couple of meetings, but yeah, that didn't last. And then we found Perkins, and we were there for a few years. So
I never remember Titani. I don't know why.
It was right around Christmas time, 2006.
Wait a minute, was that the Japanese steakhouse that we went to?
We went to Thai. It was a Thai restaurant, we used to hang out in the side room.
Yeah, was that the one on US 19?
Yep, that was on US 19, just south of Enterprise.
Yeah, I actually remember that we went there for a Christmas party.
Right, and they're actually no longer there. So anybody listening, don't get any ideas wanting to enjoy some Thai food at Thai Tani. They actually closed a few years ago.
Yep. That they were right next to that great oven pizza, which I'm sure closed down as well.
I'm sure. All that construction on US 19 has pretty much killed half the businesses along the strip, so it's...
Well, between that and the Puerto Ricans who are playing Frogger...
that's a little harsh there, but...
but sadly, it's true. Come on, when the St. Petersburg Times is making those jokes, it's too frequent that you can't make a joke about it.
Right.
Yeah, that, and of course we had Christmas parties at
Petey's Mongolian Grill. We went there a couple times, and we also went to Kobe's Japanese Steakhouse. I think it was Kobe's.
Yeah, it was Kobe's.
Yeah, and there was one other one we went. Yeah, I think that was Kobe's.
And we went to Kobe's, and then we went to one that was further down US 19.
Oh, further up US 19. Yeah, Hiro's. That's yeah, that's almost into Tarpon Springs.
Yeah. Yeah, but we had many great times. You know, a large part of my anime experience and sort of my opinions on anime are formed going to this club. For the years I went, you know, meet every other Saturday. We'd watch the newest, and we only watched fan subs, which I think was a great thing for me because, you know, as somebody who didn't get to watch much fan subs before I joined the club, you know, I did get to open up to different things. And, you know, it's at the anime club that I got to watch many shows that I fell in love with. Things like Kimi no Tanoke, Nodami Cantabile. Mm-hmm.
And we'll never look at mangoes quite the same.
Everybody, mango! Oh, God. You brought... Oh, God. I've
yeah, that was,
almost forgotten that show.
Yeah, that was Yakitate Japan.
Yes. If you've never heard of that show, that is just a... It's a show all about baking.
Yeah, baking bread. Jump. Yeah, it's the main character. What was his name? Azuma Kazuma.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. His whole dream is to create a bread just for Japan, a bread to represent Japan. And you know, throughout the whole series, he's just baking bread, just all sorts of different bread, and he's competing with other people. And he has a special ability called the Solar Hands that. Yeah. Help the yeast make the dough rise, and that's his special ability. It's like his Kamehameha.
Yeah.
And it's if you take like Dragon Ball Z and combine that with a baking anime, you have Yakitate Japan. It's really crazy, but it's well worth a watch.
Yeah. Last season they just started parodying Shonen Jump.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, things like that, Hero Man.
Oh, yeah, Hero Man. That was a great show.
Which I believe I suggested. I'm like, guys, you're going to love this. And I went a few times in my life to turn out to be right.
And Stanley even had a cameo in it. It's I mean, you can't beat that.
Nope. But, you know, time joining me because, you know, Mike is a very good gamer. We're both gamers, you know, and I think we created a great contrast. We're both, I think, PS fans, but, you know, you have more sense on Nintendo, I think, and Xbox than I do. We're both big fighter fans.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Did you pick up the $150 Street Fighter box that came out last year?
No, I didn't. And the reason I didn't is because I own practically all of those games, and I just couldn't justify spending $150 on it. There really wasn't anything that appealed to me. I mean, I already have a copy of Street Fighter 3, Street Fighter 4. I still have my old Super Nintendo copies of Street Fighter 2. I mean, I'm a huge fan, but I just couldn't justify spending that much money on that.
As somebody who didn't have all those games, and you know, with the point of the statue and the very nice box and the whole soundtrack and everything, I did end up getting it, which I have right beside me. And it really looks good. I hope I'll have, when I move, I'll have a better place to put it.
Oh, absolutely. That's the other problem is I have so many figurines. I actually have like 90% of my figurines in boxes. I just don't have enough room to display them all.
You know, so Mike is going to join me, and we're going to get right into, you know, talking about the ins and outs of the E3 convention, because a lot of stuff happened, and I think the first place we're going to start off is with the old man of the group, Nintendo.
Oh, old man Nintendo.
Yeah.
Since 1885.
Yep.
So many different business ventures for Nintendo over the years. I mean, they started with Hanafuda cards, and I think in the 1960s and 70s, they actually experimented with making a love hotel. And it wasn't until the 80s that they really started with the electronic games, especially with Game & Watch, and then, of course, the original Famicom.
Yeah.
But anyways, I digress. That's, you know, a little history lesson for everybody listening here.
Bring the flavor, because I honestly had no knowledge about the Love Hotel. That's news to me.
Yeah, I think they'd love to forget about that.
I say press conference lightly, because Nintendo didn't have a press conference.
No, they didn't. That really threw off a lot of people. It really concerned people a whole lot, especially considering the Wii U is off to a fairly weak start after a respectably large launch. I mean, I think within the first month or two, they sold about 3 or 4 million Wii U's, which is really not bad. I mean, that's, you know, a pretty quick rise to selling that many. But the problem that they're having now is that it's in a game drought, and it's too early in a console's life cycle for
a game drought.
Yeah, for a game drought. You know,
that's why, though, that they didn't have a press conference and with their decision, which I think in the long run, actually looking back, and is kind of smart. We're just going to focus on the games now. Mm-hmm. Of course, all their games are, to an extent, somewhat mostly first party. Mm-hmm. You know, content. You know, it's the new Mario Kart, the first Super Smash Brothers, which I think is the big thing. Mm-hmm. That they're announcing. And other, you know, I think there's a new Donkey Kong Country they're announcing.
Super Mario 3D World.
Yep, Bayonetta 2, which I'm still...
Oh, man, Bayonetta 2.
At some point, I really hope it does cross to a different console, and then I'll pick it up. But it's like...
That, I'm going to have to say, I really doubt it, because Nintendo is the reason that the sequel's being made. They're the ones that approached Sega and Platinum Games and said, hey, we want you to make a sequel to Bayonetta exclusively for our console. I really doubt it. I would be very surprised to see it jump consoles.
Well, I'm not saying like in the near future, but like down the line.
I would still be pretty surprised. But either way, Bayonetta 2.
And no.
Yeah. Either way, Bayonetta 2, it's looking great. I'm really looking forward to it. I love the first game. I'm glad to see a sequel's being made.
I'm glad the sequel's being made. I enjoyed the first game, too.
Right.
Probably that Devil May Cry type of action, that really stylish action that I really like. I haven't got a chance, by the way, to play the new Devil May Cry.
Right.
But, you know, it was a very unique game and everything, and I wish I didn't have to buy a Wii U just to play it. I hate... We're going to talk about that with another game coming up.
But either way, Nintendo... I mean, I think it's a great decision for them to push Sega and Platinum Games to make Bayonetta 2. Nintendo knows it needs the third-party support in order to make the Wii U appeal to its core audience. And so far, Bayonetta 2 looks just the same as the first one, which is not a bad thing. But right now, Wii U just really needs a good, fast action title to stand out from the rest of its lineup.
A fast action, I'd also suggest sort of adult, because I think one of the things that also is a stigma with Nintendo is that, oh, it's all these child games. It's Mario. It's Mario Olympics. It's Mario Kart. It's Super Smash Brothers. And as fun as everybody plays it, mm-hmm. you know, there's nothing for the hardcore, mature gamer to play on the Nintendo, though there are titles here or there. Really, that's a stigma Nintendo's gotten over the years. And this is, without a doubt, going to be a mature game that is targeting hardcore gamers.
Absolutely. And right now, that's what, you know, there's just little to draw in that hardcore demographic. And, you know, hopefully Bayonetta, despite being a relatively niche game compared to other franchises, hopefully it'll sell well. It'll show other third parties, that the system can offer a great gaming experience to hardcore gamers. Now, will it help sell more Wii U consoles? I'm going to have to say not likely, but if anything, it'll at least show the third parties that the Wii U is a capable system and that it can offer up blockbuster hits to core gamers. So it'll at least show third parties that, you know, Wii U is not really a system that they can totally ignore.
Yeah. And it's always been something, you know, with the Wii and the Wii U, I've never felt quite right back. I think it's a good system. I think it's interesting things they do. I just think they're a lot of times they're built. And that's not to say that it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think I've talked to you about this before, about it feeling gimmicky and always feeling like, you know, they're using more gimmick tools and something. And I don't know if it's traditionalist in me or...
Well, here's the thing about the Wii. The Wii was designed to target a very casual demographic, and I can almost guarantee you the main demographic that bought the Wii was parents, the elderly, and you know, because you see the Wii in nursing homes.
And people, as I can account for.
Yeah, and what really sold it was the casual games such as Wii Sports.
Yeah.
People bought it for Wii Sports. They wanted to be able to play bowling in their living room, wanted to be able to play golf in their living room. It was a great gimmick. It really was.
Yeah. No, I'm not denying that. It was something to... I mean, look at the fact that, let's be honest, part of the reason the Kinect was created and the Move, mm-hmm. which I do have, is because, you know, that proved to be successful and Sony and Microsoft wanted to get a taste of that.
Absolutely. They wanted to get a piece of that pie. The problem with the Wii U is it didn't have a lot of very strong games. I mean, you had a lot of great games for it, like, you know, all the Operation Rainfall games, such, you know, that was later in the console life cycle. You had Xenoblade Chronicles, you had The Last Story, and you had Pandora's Tower, all fantastic games. They came real late in the console's life cycle, and... You know,
and those are games that also probably flew really under the radar, and the games, again, it goes back to that point, the games there, it seems like Nintendo always pushes, are more of their first party.
Absolutely.
Games. And that's always, again, and this goes back to why Bayonetta may be a really good thing for them, if for nothing else, to bring more third party content that will maybe target more of the gamer base to it. But I also think that with this, with them not having a convention, or should I say a conference, I think it really shows they're sort of saying, and not that they're completely giving up, but I think they recognize in this life cycle they're probably going to be battling for second place.
Well, I wouldn't go that far to say they're battling for second place.
But considering what we saw from one press conference, I think they are.
And right.
Yeah. Well, which we'll get to that press conference.
Right.
With that, let's move on to the Microsoft press conference, and dear God, I was watching it today. I fell asleep 15 minutes in.
Man, I'll tell you, my the only thing I can say is Microsoft is getting really cocky, very much like Sony was with the PlayStation 3 launch. You know, they feel they built up their brand to the point that consumers will buy anything they release just because it's branded with Xbox.
Well, I think it's more than that. I think they really think that the future of the market, the future of the gamer market is the hip crowd, the crowd that now wants to call themselves gamers, though they're not.
I wouldn't go that far. I would say it didn't feel a whole lot like they were targeting gamers. They didn't talk a whole lot about games except for, you know, Forza and Killer Instinct.
And even though they had Metal Gear Solid 5, I think those were the two big announcements to come out of that was Metal Gear Solid 5 and Killer Instincts, which, and I have to admit, that's a great grab by them. That's sort of a classic fighting game, the fighter game and fighter gamer
in
me.
But it's not Killer Instinct. It just doesn't, you know, from the videos, it just, it's barely Killer Instinct. It's not Killer Instinct like I remember it. I was a huge Killer Instinct fan, but this is not the Killer Instinct that I grew up with.
I had a friend talk to me because I accidentally ruined his copy of Killer Instinct for 2 years. He had me borrowing it, and this is back when I lived in Largo.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had barely started high school, and so I had it, and I would watch my next door neighbor's kids, and they would like to play games, and I had it on the table, and one of the kids spilt juice, and it went on to the cartridge.
Now, this is a Super Nintendo one?
This is, I believe this is, this is the 64.
Okay, you can be forgiven for that one, because that was not as good as Killer Instinct.
It wasn't the Super Nintendo, it was the 64 one.
Yeah, the 64 one, yeah, that, I wasn't crazy about the 64 one. The Super Nintendo one, man, I would play that for weeks on end.
Oh, God, the Super Nintendo one came out, you had such a great fight because you had that, you had Mortal Kombat at that time, which is what it was going up against. Mm-hmm. There was that great sort of dinosaur monster fighting game.
Primal Rage.
Yes. I'm glad I could describe a game. You could just pick its name out of the air for me.
You know, I grew up with these games, so I don't know. I don't know all of them, but I know a good number of them. But yeah, you know, I mean, you had Street Fighter back then, and you know that was the go-to game. But then, you know, just out of left field, Nintendo and Rare were like, boom, here's Killer Instinct, and
well, just a great cast of characters as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit cliched. I mean, you had characters that were based on, you know, already established cliches from comic books. Like you had the Iceman, Glacius. You had the Fireman, the Human Torch, Cinder. You had the werewolf, Saberwolf. You had the skeleton from
Sinbad.
pretty much. Spinal, and you know, I would always play as either Fulgore or Jago. You had the hot chick Orchid. You know.
And there was another one, Maya, wasn't it?
She was in Killer Instinct 2.
Yeah. That was the 64 version.
You had TJ Combo, who was the black boxer, the Balrog ripoff.
Yeah.
Pretty much had almost the same moveset. It was and then you had Native American Chief Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean, so far they've introduced
three characters.
Yeah. I know they had Jago and Saberwolf. Who was the third character they read?
Glacius,
yes. I like how Glacius looks now, but yeah, still at the same time, I just can't feel this new Killer Instinct. In all honesty, I would have actually been impressed if they had just released the original 94 and 95 arcade games.
Well, you know, hopefully with this announcement, hopefully that's something, and again, it probably can only be on the Xbox, but I do hope that's something that might happen on all systems. I pray to God.
I doubt it. With Microsoft owning majority stake in Rare, I really doubt that's going to happen. But, you know, Microsoft, if you're listening, if you release the original arcade games, I will consider buying an Xbox One just to play it.
And that might be something that they do with the game, is like, oh, well, here's the game, and it comes with the original arcade. That might be something they pair with it, though that may be a long shot. But I think with Killer Instinct, it is something to where I think I need to see more of that game to be more impressed by it.
What do you think of the fact that they're offering it up for free?
You mean with just three characters?
They're offering three characters? All I've heard is they're offering it up for free, and that the other characters will all either be unlockables or DLC.
Yeah. Oh, that would be interesting, but...
I mean, Bandai Namco is doing something very similar with Tekken Revolution?
Tekken Revolution,
Yeah, they're doing something very similar to that. It's interesting, and you know, the plus side to that is, you know, if you play a fighting game and you really only play as one character, that's great. Then you can get the fighting game for cheaper if you're not going to play as these other characters. It's like buying Street Fighter, and if the only character you play is either, you know, Ryu or Ken, and you either get them for free or you buy Ryu or Ken, and then you're all set.
That's an interesting concept. It really is an interesting concept. It's definitely something that we're going to be seeing with these future consoles, is they're really going to be exploring the whole downloadable DLC market and how to, you know, expand that. Though I will say this, I get maybe the purest gamer and fighter gamer in me kind of laughs at that, just because I always love playing as all the characters.
Absolutely. That's part of the charm, is being able to play as all the different characters and just seeing which character fits for you. That's the other side of the coin, is that you don't have that opportunity to sit down with a character, try and learn everything there is about that character.
Yeah.
You don't have that, the ability to do that, unless you, you know, plop down the money for each and every character as DLC, or you play through it and try and unlock characters if they give you the opportunity to unlock those characters.
And, yeah, it... fighting games, you know, every good game is a time-consuming process because there's an aspect to it to really get into the game, whether it be the time spent grinding on an RPG or the time spent in the practice room practicing combos and seeing how you can be able to play with that character. Mm-hmm. And practicing making your own combos.
Right.
But, you know, Killer Instinct, again, I think it's something I see more of. Forza Motorsports, you know, I guess it was impressive back mm-hmm. when it was on Xbox 3. It doesn't really look that impressive to me, especially compared to another driving simulator I'm going to be talking about in a couple minutes.
Yeah, Gran Turismo, absolutely. Now Forza, I really liked Forza 3. Forza 4 was a bit of a step forward for Forza, but not, you know, it wasn't really all that impressive. I like the graphics with Forza 5. I mean, if you look at the designs of the courses and, you know, just how much detail they put into that, I'm really impressed. I'm really impressed. I'm almost to the point that, you know, if the game were a lot more different from Forza 3 and Forza 4, if it's a lot more different from those games, I may consider getting an Xbox One to play Forza 5. But if, you know, if it's not really that much different, then, you know, fancy graphics and everything just can't sell the game for me.
And I think the last game we'll talk about that happened, that they really showed at the press conference, is Metal Gear Solid 5. Well, I mean, which looks interesting. Metal Gear Solid has always been one of those series where I want to play it. It feels like it's going to be so time-consuming. Mm-hmm. I never feel like I have the time to play, especially with some of the things they're touting and everything. But, I mean, it looked really good.
But, man, no David Hayter this time. They're hating on Hayter.
Why are they hating on the Guyver?
Yeah,
thank you for getting that.
But, you know, it's a tough call for me. I mean, I like Kiefer Sutherland, but David Hayter has been the voice of Snake since Metal Gear Solid. Now, granted, the Snake in Metal Gear Solid 5 is Naked Snake, a.k.a. Big Boss, which is a completely different character than David Hayter's Solid Snake. And I can picture David Hayter voicing a young Big Boss, considering that Solid Snake is much younger than Big Boss, and the age of Big Boss in Metal Gear Solid 5, he's going to be in his late 40s. When does it take place? 1984, I believe.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. So by that point, he's really becoming an old man. I think he's old enough that, you know, you can really picture him with more of a vocal inflection. And the problem with David Hayter is he really just has one voice.
Yeah.
You know, he talks like this, and, you know, that's really all it is. It's like, Colonel, you know, Colonel, where's Meryl? And that's David Hayter. That's his voice. He has very, you know, he has a great voice, but it's just not as much of a dynamic range of inflections as, say, Kiefer Sutherland would have.
Yeah.
So I tend to agree with Kojima's decision to choose Kiefer Sutherland as a voice actor for Naked Snake, aka Big Boss. But, you know, I can definitely see the confusion and the concern of having David Hayter replaced with another voice actor. And you know, the confusion's further compounded since Akio Otsuka, the Snake's Japanese voice actor, so far seems to be slated to voice Naked Snake in Metal Gear Solid 5 in the Japanese version.
I mean, I'm not so much worried about the story, because I know either way it's going to be awesome. The story for Metal Gear Solid has always been great. It's always been this sort of mixture of sort of like a more dark and dirty James Bond to an extent.
Right.
But, I think the good thing is it's also going to be on the PS4, but it's something to where, you know, again, they're showing off a game where you really have to put a lot of investment in.
Right.
A lot of time investment, so.
And speaking of voices, you know, like I said, I always thought, you know, Hayter just, really sounded like he was straining. But, you know, at the same time, you know, kind of going back on the fan reaction, it's because David Hayter has become the iconic voice for Solid Snake, and it'll just be awkward to have another voice come out when, you know, Snake speaks. You know, I feel similarly about Cam Clark, you know, probably a bit more strongly. You know, I can't stand Cam Clark's voice. I really can't. But at the same time, I can't fathom Leonardo or Liquid Snake with anyone else's voice. I just can't. You know, you just become accustomed to that voice, no matter how grating it may sound to you.
Yeah.
You get so used to that voice that when you hear somebody else's voice, you're like, wait a minute, this isn't normal.
It's like if they took Christian Sabat mm-hmm. off doing Piccolo.
Yeah, that would just sound a bit too awkward.
Yeah. That was like the first one that popped into my mind.
Gosh.
But
imagine Cam Clark doing the voice of Piccolo. That'd be terrifying.
Well, could be where it could be Phil Lamar.
Oh gosh.
Yes, I have been keeping track of Metricon. outside of that, really nothing. I mean, we're gonna get into the big controversy in a second, but I mean, as far as games are concerned, I mean, I get World of Tanks and Minecraft.
You know, Minecraft, it's intriguing that it's gotten so much clout that it's made the transition from a PC, an indie PC game, to now a fairly mainstream console game.
My cousin plays it all the time.
It's a great game. It really is.
For kids?
Well, no, absolutely not just for kids. No, it's a game really that anybody can pick up and enjoy. It's similar to Animal Crossing, where, you know, it's just a game that it doesn't matter how old or young you are, you can pick it up and you can just enjoy the hell out of that game.
But, you know, you had, and so really this felt like limited on games, and then of course you had them talking about the Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
The price point, which is
$499,
aka $550 after taxes, or like $570 or something like that.
Right. You know.
So over $500. You can't play used games on it. The Kinect will always be on, which especially with the big privacy.
Well, actually, that's not necessarily true. You can play used games. I think they're working on the formula they're going to use for used games, but you can only buy them from certain retailers, which I think is very limiting. And in all honesty, I think it's very anti-consumerist. It's very, very concerning to,
yes.
You know, it's you know, you have, you know, a big part of the market that all they buy is used games. You know, absolutely. There's a lot of gamers that, you know, that's the only way they can really, you know, be able to enjoy the games. They don't have the money to spend $60 on a new title. Nor, in all honesty, nor should they have to spend $60 on a new title.
No. But, I mean, it's the thing of, like, you know, for me, I think half the games I bought in the last year have been used. I've actually had the ability to buy some new games, like the Zone of the Ender and the Tekken Tag Tournament 2 and DOA 5, the fighting game. But it is, and also the fact that, like, I've picked up a fair number of used games
mm-hmm.
From Gundam, Dynasty Warriors, Gundam 3, and Lollipop Chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and for that matter, you know, that's how I get some of the games. You know, you have a decision to make. You only get one game. Well, I'll get this game now, and then later down the line, I can pick it up used at, you know, the price, because then I'll have the money to afford it. And so that's what happens, and that's how people will play a lot of games. And I agree with you. Microsoft is just this, you know, all this money is going to GameStop and these, you know, other, you know, used game outlets, and we basically want to get our piece of the pie.
Absolutely.
Still paying enough. And it's like,
I mean, I see their argument. Absolutely. All these development studios are losing a lot of money that they could be making directly because used game sales don't go to their bottom line. Used game sales, pretty much, you know, you buy a game from GameStop, 100% of the proceeds are going to GameStop. I would agree to have some sort of agreement between Microsoft or, you know, not Microsoft, but the development studios and GameStop to have some sort of a royalty system that when they sell a used copy of, you know, when GameStop sells a used copy of, let's say, Call of Duty or whatever, then I think, you know, Activision should receive a bit of a royalty from that, you know, if 10 or 15%. I think that would be perfectly fair.
The only thing I worry about that is really how is that going to affect their model? Because, you know, at the end of the day, that's going to make them raise the prices on the games.
Well, that's the trade-off there. Yeah. But at least with that, you know, you'll have development studios that will be happy that they're at least getting some royalty, some reimbursement for these used games.
It's a hard issue to go back and forth on.
It really is.
Because in this case, yeah, it is an actual retail herd that's doing this. But at the same point, especially, you know, at that point, it might come down to, you know, oh, well, I'm not getting much for this game at GameStop. And, you know, at the same point in time, these huge games are costing that much. I could probably make more money just saying people, hey, I have a used game. Do you want to buy it? And are you going to force people to pay you royalties for selling their game? So it's a question. And I think control the downloadable content aspect of it if it's a downloadable game. But I think the physical games, it's going to be a hard thing to do.
And also you have to take into account, I, for one, am big on gaming nostalgia. I mean, I still play my Super Nintendo. I still play my original Nintendo. Heck, I actually just recently purchased a Super Famicom. And I've been importing and buying all sorts of old cartridge games.
Now, stuff if I get the money for.
Yeah. Now take that into consideration that, you know, games that are released this console generation, you know, think, you know, 15 or 20 years down the road, you want to break out the old Xbox or Xbox 360 and you want to buy some of the used games that you didn't get a chance to play, you know, 15 or 20 years ago. You know, think of, you know, kids that are growing up these days that, you know, they're, you know, 12, 13 years old right now and they're, you know, they grew up on Xbox just like you and I grew up on Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64 and the original NES. And, you know, think, like I said, 15, 20 years down the road, you want to buy some of those old games that you used to play so you can play them again. Or let's say you have kids and you want to show your kids, hey, these are the games that I used to play when I was growing up.
And they may not beat it because the retailers may not be there anymore if they really go this route and sort of shut this part of the industry down, which I think is just a very important aspect of the industry.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you know, and you know, granted, yeah, you can download half those games now. Nintendo has their virtual console. Sony has a lot of their PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 classics on the PlayStation 3. But it's you know, it just doesn't have the same feel as playing it on the original systems.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
It's yeah.
And like I said, and that's just one aspect of it. The whole Kinect is on, it goes all those privacy issues that people are having. You need to turn it on or play it within 24 hours.
Yeah, it has to talk to Microsoft at least once in a 24-hour period. Otherwise, it'll say nope, you can't play.
Yeah, apparently there was the Navy just released like today an article, sort of blasting that, like, you know, our men and women overseas who, you know, play Xbox.
Oh yeah, that's gonna be killer for them. I mean, think of, you know, they're working hard for our country and they just want to relax and play some games. You know, they're out in the middle of BFE.
Yeah.
You know, they don't
they can't play the Xbox.
They don't have reliable internet out there.
Yeah. And so, and all of that stuff, it's just, like, just, and you felt the crowd die while watching the conference as well.
Yeah, there was not a whole lot of applause during that conference.
Yeah. Well, and again, I'm speaking that, which is towards the end. The crowd was pretty much dead halfway through because they were like, really, Minecraft? This is your big announcement, Minecraft?
Now, have you heard about this? I haven't been able to substantiate this. I'm not sure if this is a rumor or not, but I've heard rumors. I'm sure it's a rumor, but I'm not sure if it's fact or not, that Microsoft actually paid third parties not to show their titles for competing consoles such as the PlayStation 4. Did you hear about that?
I did not hear about that. And though I guess that's rumor because, you know, then why did they show are you talking about on other consoles?
On other consoles, yes.
On other conferences. Oh. I didn't hear that, though considering what they're doing now, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I'm you know, and it's practices like that that just really just don't feel right to me and really kind of lower my opinion of Microsoft, which...
I say that Microsoft, you know, it's beyond being cocky. It's this, you know, we're Microsoft. It's like Nike, again, mm-hmm. from the 90s. You know, you're buying our brand, and this is how our brand goes, and you want to be a part of the brand, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I say that whole thing about being part of the IT crowd, because it's, all the IT people, the Kim Kardashians and all these celebrities play Xbox One. You want to be part of Xbox One? And that's what it's feeling like the members-only club. And considering the way they're going, it's only going to be one members-only club.
I can assure you Kim Kardashian would not at all... not at all convince me. She would not convince me to play Xbox One.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kim. You're a little haughty, but no. I think I'll pass.
I never found her hot.
she's pretty cute. She has some charms, but
Really, are we talking about Kim Kardashian? I don't even know why I went into this discussion. that's a road I don't want to go down to.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics, and the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but but the bulk of views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
ChefPlus.com.
Ready to form Voltron!
I am Batman!
This is a job for Superman!
Power Rangers!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform!
By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast. Coming January 1st, 2013 to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
But let's talk about something more awesome, and obviously, which I think by now everybody knows, is the winner of this convention, the Sony press conference.
Yeah, Sony really came out strong in this one, and... I think a lot of it, they were fortunate, especially with, the consumer response to the Xbox. I think that really helped bolster Sony's conference. In my opinion, overall, Sony, I was expecting them to follow suit with Microsoft with their used games policy.
And some of our friends on Facebook, believed it too, and I think they still believe that they're going to follow eventually, but...
Yeah,
that's one of the big things that happened is they announced used games, and there was a report later that sort of amended, but at the conference it said, we will not deny used games being played on the console. Of course, Drax Henton would later go on to tell, news outlets that basically what they're doing is they're leaving it up to the publishers themselves, whether they want to allow their games to be played used, which I think is a great idea, because... It does put it more... I think this should be more on the publishers than it should be on the console.
Mm-hmm. And as soon as, Sony was finished with their conference, the internet just went crazy. I mean, they were just thrilled. $399 U.S. dollars.
Yes.
And
you
that's
know,
it.
That's going to be cheaper than what the PS3 launched for.
Yes.
They learned their lesson.
$599 U.S. dollars. it's great that, the internet just had an astounding response to Sony's conference. But at the same time, it's really sad that we're really praising a company just because they're not screwing over their customers. They're not being anti-consumer.
I see where you're coming from, but we do need to cheer that because... I think so often that is happening. I think it's sad that companies are screwing over their customers, but that's why I think it's important that when a company doesn't, You know, and Sony's been trying to get back into the good graces for, I think, the past 2 years, ever since the whole hacker thing happened last year.
No, that wasn't last. That was a few years ago.
That was
2011, I think.
Yeah, 2011. Yeah. So ever since that happened, they've been trying to get really back into the good graces.
I mean, they were in damage control. I mean,
this got them out of damage control. I will say this. I'm going to repeat what I said. Well, actually, I said halfway through the conference. Mm-hmm. Because there's a certain game I think we're going to get to. But, you know, by that point and all the way through, and I really think it's the perfect way to exemplify really how good Sony's press conference is, which is the final saying is, all right, Sony, shut the fuck up and take my money now.
Well, speaking of taking money, the big gotcha from the Sony conference is that with the PlayStation 4, Sony will be requiring you to have a PlayStation Plus subscription in order to play your games online. Now, granted, it's not all their games. I mean, some of their games will be free to play online, but, you know, for, I would imagine, you know, all the core games, you need to have a PlayStation Plus subscription. Now, you know,
But even that, you know what? The way the PlayStation Plus subscription is now, it is actually very affordable for like a month-by-month type of thing.
Oh, PlayStation Plus is fantastic. I mean, I'm not knocking it at all. You know, the fact that they give you so many free games a month, it's more games than...
Which, by the way, to go back to like, that's one of the things like, oh, from now on, if you have Xbox Gold, you can get up to 2 games a month. Like, yeah, Sony's been doing that for the past, 3 years?
Absolutely, and just, you know, how popular that is, it's fantastic. It's really more games than I can play, and they just give them to you for free.
Now,
mind you, they're not yours to keep. If you let your PlayStation Plus subscription lapse, they're gone. You can't play them. But while you're subscribing for, what is it, $50 a year?
$50 a year, that is a steal.
And that's the price of one game. That's less than the price of one game.
Absolutely. But it's so I don't see that as much of a problem because it is such a good system, and it unlike Xbox Live, it's affordable. And for that matter, again, that's really going to be for games that are primarily online. Mm-hmm. But a lot of Sony's best games aren't necessarily focused on their online play.
Right.
And that's the good part. And again, it is, you know, we're sitting there, going by the press club, watching, like, I'm really loving what I'm seeing. You know, they showed Last of Us.
Mm-hmm.
Because first they showed off the PS3, which again, they're really, and that's the thing I've always liked about Sony is, even as they got into the PS3 and they were like the third year, they were still touting the PS2. And stuff they were bringing onto it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the PS2, you had, you know, a 100 million strong install base.
Yeah, and I still have my PS. I still play my PS2.
I still have my PS2. It's not hooked up right now, but, you know, I'll break it out every now and then. You know, I'll play some Metal Gear Solid 2. I'll play, you know, some of the fighting games that are on that. Guilty Gear, King of Fighters. I mean, there's... Yeah, there's
King of...
lots of fantastic games.
If I still had it and didn't have... my copy of Marvel vs. Capcom 2 that I paid for $80 and ended up selling back for $20.
Oh, man, you got taken.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Damn you. Speaking of GameStop.
oh, gosh.
That's my suckered story right there. The reason it cost $20 is because literally 6 months after I finally bought it for $80... Mm-hmm. That's when the game companies decided, hey, we're releasing Marvel vs. Capcom 2 downloadable on the PS3 and Xbox 360.
Oh, man, but it's still going for, like, big bucks on eBay. You can't get it for cheaper than, like, you know, $80.
Yeah. But, you know, but again, going with that, it has The Last of Us, which looks really... you know, a thing I like about it, it doesn't feel like it's basically an apocalypse sort of zombie type of story, mm-hmm. but it doesn't feel that way, and I really like that. As opposed to something like
it's like the post-apocalyptic zombie game without zombies.
Yeah, and I really like that as because there are actually human enemies, and It really looks interesting. Again, by Naughty Dog, who did Uncharted.
Yeah, and it's all martial law. You know, you go through that, and you know, I was very impressed with it. I haven't played it yet, but for everything I've seen, it looks fantastic.
And then it showed Beyond Two Souls. I really love the look of that game. I'm very interested in the story. The graphics are, you know, William Dafoe. Oh my God, did they capture his facial movements in that?
Oh wow,
it looked awesome. You know, that's the one with Ellen Page and, like I said, William Dafoe and other people in it. That's the one that had that bit. I think it was last year they had the sort of the big demo of it.
Right.
And so they're going along, and then they finally get to the PS4, and they're talking about the games they're having. And mind you, I did not know that Toriyama Nomura, and I know I'm messing up that name, had like spoken at the initial PS4 announcement. Like, well, he has more announcement for you, and he comes on screen, he's speaking in Japanese, and he's talking about something that you waited a long time for, and starts playing the footage, and there's the footage for what we all knew was Final Fantasy 13 Versus. And again, it's cutscenes, and you're like, well, I've seen this before. Then they start showing actual in-game fight footage.
Mm.
My God, there's actual action footage! May it actually be... This is because, like, I'm sure you can attest to, this is a game we all joked would be a ghost. It never happened.
Now, didn't Final Fantasy 13 Versus, that turned into Lightning Returns, right?
What?
Didn't Final Fantasy 13 Versus, that turned into Lightning Returns, right?
No.
Oh, so it's still a separate game.
Yeah, it's still a separate... Lightning Returns and 13-2 were just spin-offs from the original 13 game. This is because again, it had that graphic where it was at 13 Versus, and it changed into Final Fantasy 15, and at the conference, and it's like I was just feeling like, great idea changing it to Final Fantasy 15. It really does feel like it's a really different story than what it would have been if it was part of that whole trilogy that they were talking about when they announced 13. And again, it's more. I really love. It's by the same people who are doing Kingdom Hearts, so it's this more action, you know, Kingdom Hearts sort of fighting system.
Right.
And it looks great, and just the graphics, like, oh my God, this game may actually happen. And by the way, speaking of Kingdom Hearts, come back. Oh, I got one more surprise for you. And it's a teaser trailer. But, like, and I'm watching, like, no, he can't. I've been saying for years that the big game in E3 would be announcement of Kingdom Hearts 3. Years I was disappointed. I'm like, no. You're just going to make my night, aren't you? And there's the trailer for Kingdom Hearts 3, the Suave of the Shadow, and Sora launching him, and like, I do not know to this day what kept me seated in my seat, not running down my hall, putting a hole like Wile E. Coyote through my door, and running down the street screaming, yes. I was so happy.
Or going through your door and saying, oh, yeah.
That, too. I definitely have the size.
Hey.
I've never been shy about my size.
Hey, that's fine.
Yeah, but, they announced Kingdom Hearts 3. They announced Final Fantasy 15, which I highly expect will be out by Christmas of 2014.
Right.
I really think it will be for both of those. You had Watch Dogs, which looked awesome.
Now, 15, they're also releasing for the Xbox One, but I think they're only doing that in the United States. They're overseas. Yeah. They're not...
I think it's the same thing they're doing with 13 for Kingdom Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing they're doing with 13. They're doing it for Kingdom Hearts 3 and Final Fantasy 15, where it's only in the United States and releasing it for the Xbox One. And, I mean, and even though it is, I still pretty much, I think everybody's considering, I mean, they considered it with Final Fantasy 13 that it was pretty much still exclusive to the PS.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I mean, that's where everybody's going to be pretty much playing it from. But you had Watch Dogs, which looked really interesting. You had the trailer for Assassin's Creed, which...
Assassin's Creed 4?
Yeah.
Mm.
And then, of course, at that, again, like I said, at that point, it was like everything they showed, oh, man, that looks awesome. Just shut up. Shut the fuck up and take my money back. Every time they showed it. And then, of course, they announced the whole price point and everything, and like, oh, my God. One of the biggest pops tonight, like we kind of talked about before, the whole used games will still be playable. That place erupted.
I'll tell you one thing I was a bit disappointed with the Sony conference. They had almost no news about the Vita. And
yeah.
And I was really expecting them to announce a $50 price drop like Sony did in Japan. You know, I think a $200 price point for the Wi-Fi Vita. Yeah, I mean, they'll have me sold. I'll buy it without a second thought. And I think that a lot of other consumers feel the same way.
I think they will announce that. I think the conference, the big thing was the PS4, and that's what they got. Another thing I liked, I love the whole independent game developers thing that they, where they had like the 9 game developers, they were all playing at the same time. Mm-hmm. That was really interesting to me. And then, of course, they had the whole Bungie Studios Destiny game, which does look interesting. And it's just, it was a conference or that just built and built and built, and it was just amazing.
Right.
I mean, anything else about the conference that you feel I'm missing out on?
No, I think we pretty much covered the majority of it. You know, EA had their their conference, and really about the only thing that I recall that they announced was Need for Speed Rivals, which it's like another year, another Need for Speed game. Woo, you know.
They are showing Battlefield 4, and you know, I think the Battlefield series is a good game. You know, I played it. I've enjoyed it.
Right.
I'm not the biggest first-person shooter fan.
Yeah, neither am I. I'm, you know, a first-person shooter really has to get my interest in order for me to really enjoy playing it. Like Half-Life, pretty much any Half-Life game, or pretty much anything by Valve is an automatic buy.
At this point, you know, first-person shooters are the sort of action blockbuster movie of the video game genre, I think it's safe to say.
Right. But, you know, the problem is, you know, especially with the Xbox 360, a large percentage of the games are first-person shooters.
Yep.
You kind of get an overload of these first-person shooters. At least I do. I know other people, you know, might disagree with me, and you know, they take first-person shooters, they just eat them up. I just can't really get into it. I can't, you know, justify buying another game that's marginally different from another game.
I mean, I'll play for the story. I mean, if I ever get Gamefly, that will help, and then I'll play maybe a Midoriya, because then I can just breeze through the story mode. Like, okay, I played this game, it's over.
Right.
But I have Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy the multiplayer. I'll pop it in, I'll play the multiplayer. That's all I need.
Right. Now, what was the other game that they announced? It was that parkour game, Mirror's Edge?
Mirror's Edge 2, I heard a lot, you know, a lot of good things about the first game. I still haven't got to play it. I really think it's an interesting game because it's a really interesting idea of movement,
mm-hmm.
Taking the parkour style. So, yeah, I'm definitely interested in that.
I think this one they've actually made into an actual shooter rather than just a parkour running game.
Well, I think it's more that she knows martial arts, and so that's an aspect of it. Like, it showed her doing grabs and actual stuff like that, though I think there will be some aspects to where she possibly shoots.
Yeah, actually, it looks like, let's see here. I'm wondering if Mirror's Edge 2, is it a direct sequel to the first one, or is it like a reboot?
It's a direct sequel, from what I hear.
Hmm.
I wouldn't know, why would they even want to reboot it? It's like, it's not that old of a franchise. It's not even a franchise, it's one game.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they may look at it and say, it was just a parkour game, and, you know, let's kind of reboot it into a full first-person shooter type game. Which, you know, I can't really agree with that, because the charm of Mirror's Edge is the fact that it's, you know, you spend much of the game just jumping from building to building and running. It's not so much that you turn around and, you know, shoot your enemies dead.
I don't, from what I've seen of it, it doesn't look like it's going to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
looks like it is mostly just going to be parkour and, you know, that aspect.
Right.
So maybe a more of a revenge plot is, or some type of plot like that is going to be in there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're sort of going into it now. Really, what are the other games that really piqued your interest? That, you know, weren't at conferences, that were on the floor and everything?
Pretty much all that really piqued my interest the most. Well, actually, oh, you know what? I'm forgetting about Dragon's Crown.
Oh.
That, I'm a huge fan of VanillaWare. I've got just about every VanillaWare game in my collection. I have Grim Grimoire, Odin Sphere. I have Ludamasa, the Demon Blade. So I just love the art style that VanillaWare uses. It's you know, a bit exaggerated, but it just looks, you know, very fantastic. It's like you're playing a painting. In essence, yeah. They really put a lot of detail into their character designs, and, you know, mind you, the game is essentially a 2D game, but yeah. it just feels so lifelike. It's amazing. So I'm really looking forward to Dragon's Crown.
Yeah, for me, Thief from Square Enix looks very interesting. They talk about it's like an old franchise. I really don't remember it, but
yeah, I vaguely remember it.
Yeah, so, but I'm going to be interested in what they do with it. Actually, this goes back to Sony, but Gran Turismo 6.
Mm-hmm. Which I was blown away it's going to be on the PlayStation 3.
Yeah, that's on the PlayStation 3.
They showed the trailer for that, and I was thinking, man, this PlayStation 4 is capable of showing some really awesome graphics. And then they said, it's for the PlayStation 3. I couldn't believe it.
The one thing that I've always loved about Gran Turismo over Forza is I just think their variety of cars is just absolutely amazing.
Well, Forza has a good variety of cars, too. But Gran Turismo has established itself as the premier
driving simulator. Yeah,
you know, you have that established as, you know, being the type of game that you can get a racing wheel for, and they make racing wheels like the Logitech, you know, I think it's the G27 racing wheel. Let me look that up just so I'm 100% sure. But I mean, you have that racing wheel that you can, you know, get that and you get a play seat, and you can pretty much set up your own cockpit for under roughly about $500. Yeah. Right in your living room, you have your own little cockpit for a car, with a gear shift knob and everything. You hook it up to your PlayStation 3, and you have a very capable driving simulator right there. You can do something similar with Forza, but Forza is more of an arcade racer. It's not so much of a driving simulator.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And like I said, that's why I've always loved Gran Turismo, is, like, it's a simulator, you know. It's one of those things where people have always hated on Gran Turismo for being what it is, which is a simulator. Like, well, we want realistic crashes. Well, but that's not what Gran Turismo does.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I always remember that, you know, Gran Turismo 3 being, like, one of those few things that both me and my sister could actually sit down together and enjoy. Then again, that was because she was just getting her license.
And I've heard people complaining about Gran Turismo. It's so hard to play. It's hard to keep your car on the road. Well, yeah, this is because you're trying to control a motor vehicle with a PlayStation controller. It works, yes, once you get used to it. But at the same time, it's, you know, you have a lot of people that are used to playing games like Need for Speed, where with Need for Speed, it has a lot of driving assists built into it.
Yeah.
So it pretty much, the game, in essence, drives itself for you with Need for Speed. With Gran Turismo, you feel the full power of these cars. You have to, you know, in some cases, really, really fight with the car to get it to do a high-speed turn, you know, and a hairpin going at, you know, 100, 120 miles an hour.
The only thing that they ever did that I didn't like was the aspect of, like, points off for, like, aggressive driving in races, which was, that is the one thing that, you know, I you'd use, like, the whole, like, banking off cars.
Yeah.
But... Which, it's not the point of the simulator, but it's like, okay, now we're just getting, we're thinking two-way detail.
Well, you know? Yeah, but if you take into account, that's considered bad sportsmanship in motocross. You know, you go to a motocross meet and, you know, you have, you know, you, let's say you go to an IndyCar race, you're not going to have, you know, other drivers banking off of other drivers to get ahead. You know, they, you know, NASCAR, you don't have them intentionally, in most cases, intentionally crashing.
Keyword intentionally.
Yeah, keyword intentionally. Yeah.
This is the NASCAR crowd we're talking about. But no, I understand that, but it's like, you know, again, so there is a point to making the game sometimes too difficult, and I think that made it just a tad bit too difficult for people.
I think it gives the challenge, at least. It gives more of a challenge. I think part of it is that's really appreciable is the fact that it's so challenging.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's not something that doesn't make me want to buy it, but it's like, yeah. But I am very interested in that. Oddly enough, one of the ones I was just looking up before we recorded, I guess it's going to be a downloadable game off the market. They're DuckTales.
DuckTales? Woo!
DuckTales arcade game. They're like redoing and they're bringing, I guess it's going to be on the market.
No, it's actually not the arcade game. Did they have a DuckTales arcade game? No, this is based on the old NES game.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the old NES game.
Yeah.
That was a classic. I think it was made by the same team that made Mega Man.
Yeah.
Because the characters look like Mega Manified versions of like Scrooge McDuck and Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Yeah.
Now, what blew me away about the remake, they got every one of the original voices to come back.
I'm just waiting for when they're going to do the Darkwing Duck.
Darkwing Duck? Well, you know, I can't really remember the Darkwing Duck game for NES.
No, I'm saying, like, if this is successful, I would love for them to maybe, even if it's, like, a new, but, like, take the same aspect and do, like, a similar thing with Darkwing Duck.
I would say we'd be more likely to see a remake of Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers.
That too, that's...
Because that was another very popular title on the NES.
Well, you know, and that would be something successful for Disney to do, if this is successful, to do it to a lot of their old Disney NES, Super NES classics.
Oh, like, absolutely.
I remember having fun with the Aladdin game and the Lion King game, which were, you know, these were essentially platformers. So,
but, I mean, you know, they could always do remakes of those.
Yeah.
But, you know, not that I want to encourage, you know, more and more remakes, but still, the DuckTales remake, I mean, it's refreshing to see, you know, what really has so much nostalgia behind it for kids that grew up in the 80s like you and me. You know, I remember coming home from school every day, putting on the Disney Afternoon and, you know, watching. Gosh, you remember Disney Afternoon?
I remember Disney Afternoon. Yeah, I remember Saturday morning with Thundercats and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Gosh.
But, that's the thing is that we're really seeing a rebound towards, you know, us of the late 80s, early 90s, that, you know, the generation that we are, the generation, like I said, call it the Toonami generation. But, you know, the aspect of really going back to stuff we like, I really think this really started to make headway in 2010. You know, I know I've talked to you about, you know, it, going into anime even, you know, how good the 2010 season is. This recent anime season has been just absolutely incredible. Even the animes I won't like Attack of the Titans, I can sit there and say is incredible.
I've not really had a chance to watch a lot of the new anime. I've been watching the second season of Oreimo.
Yes.
It's okay. I'm not as crazy about it as I was the first
season. Not as good as the first season, but I still think it's good.
Yeah, I mean, it's got its charms. It's got its charms, but yeah, I don't know. It doesn't have the same feel as the first one.
But I think it's getting real good, and, you know, we're seeing all this stuff because I think, again, they're focusing on the aspect of what people like us like, which is story and good gameplay, rather than, you know, gimmicks and like, oh, we're appealing to this crowd of people or this crowd of people. You know, they're bringing back classics like DuckTales.
Right, right, and I'll tell you, it's just, you know, I'm thrilled to see them, you know, just going back that far with a game that really was such a classic back in the day. I mean, that was, you know, DuckTales just, you know, it was just a fun little game that, you know, you picked up and you played and you just really enjoyed. To see them take such, you know, what could be considered a pretty obscure title, take it and bring it back and just remaster it completely to the point that, you know, you have cutscenes and everything, and it just makes it really meld in with the cartoon. It just really gives, you know, a game that is already fantastic, it gives it even more personality.
Absolutely, yeah. But, you know, with that being said, I think it's time to move on to the final aspect. We're going to talk about our best and worst. So I'll let you go first, and you can tell me what you feel was some of the best and some of the worst, you know, like conference trailer, game that you saw at E3.
Okay, I will say the best of E3 for me was Sony's instructional video on how to share games with your friends. that was hands down the best thing out of E3 for me. I mean, it was just that unintentional jab. It was completely unintentional. They you know, they didn't mean to use it as a jab against Microsoft, but it's just Microsoft just played right into it. And you know, and I think really the fact that Microsoft's policies were just so ill received by consumers that really just made it so epic. So delicious, so salty. it was just so well played. It really was. That was for me the number one highlight of E3 was that little instructional video. It's like how to share games with your friends. Step one, and they had like this 5-second infographic, you know. And then they cut back to these two guys, and he hands them the game, and the guy says, "Thanks." That's nice, short, sweet, simple.
I don't know if I'll one-up you with that, but I have one that's similar that happened at E3. I think I'm sure you know.
Yeah, try and one-up me. Go for it.
No. I'm going to go after you, so continue with yours.
Other than that, you know, I like the fact, you know, me being... I'm a big Nintendo fan. Nintendo really played it real safe with E3 this year. You know, they covered their bases with the core franchises. And it's really refreshing to finally see games for the Wii U that really look like they belong on a next-gen console. They really needed to step up their game with the Wii U being off to a weak start, and this really makes me feel a lot better about Nintendo's position where they're at right now with the Wii U. I think it makes the system a bit more respectable. And I'm really looking forward to see where they're at by the end of the year.
Yeah. For me, the moment that I found really absolutely hilarious, and I did find that hilarious, and I think yours is better, but my moment was the Dark Wizard video.
Dark Wizard.
It was the, or Dark Sorcerer.
Dark Sorcerer.
It was at the Sony press conference.
Mm-hmm.
They're showing that game, and you think it's a game, and then all of a sudden it cuts, and it turns out they were actors.
Let's see, Dark Sorcerer.
No, it was just a funny little video where they were, I guess they were showing off the power of the PS4.
Right, oh yeah, yeah, I remember that. Okay, yeah, with, it was from Quantic Dream?
Yes.
The makers of Beyond Two Souls, and they... made this demo, yeah, and the guy looked like an old guy.
You thought it was
live action, and then they show you, no, this was all CG. This was.
And, you know, I think the actor who was voicing him was Robert Atkins Downs, who's like Mumra in the newest Thundercats. Because it was that aspect, the way he was talking, you were waiting for him, like, turn this decaying body into Mumra the Ever-Living! And I was just waiting for the screen, and I was like, that's Robert acting down, so I believe it is. And it's just them going, and then it turned, just, oh my god, it was hilarious, the way it cut, and it was like, oh, it was a green screen, it's like, About the script, sir.
Instills me with much confidence to know that the PlayStation 4 will be able to accurately render an old man.
But, best conference, Sony. I think game of E3, Last of Us again, because it just looks really amazing, and I mean, it makes me want to play what is basically a zombie game.
Mm-hmm.
I give a lot of points to. Best trailer for me, tied between Kingdom Hearts 3 and, even though it was a teaser trailer, and the Final Fantasy 15 trailer, which I cannot wait for announcement of release date. I'm really going to predict that Final Fantasy 15 next spring, Kingdom Hearts 3, holiday season of 2014. I think that's really a safe bet.
Yep.
Especially seeing how far it probably is.
I think 2014 is going to be a great year for gamers. I mean, there's just so much lining up that it's going to be a perfect storm of some really great games. Yeah, for me, I would say the best games that came out of E3, definitely Dragon's Crown. That's by far, I think, the best game that I saw on E3. Bayonetta is also up there. I'm very impressed with it. It's very similar to the first Bayonetta, but that's okay. I'm perfectly fine with it. I love the first Bayonetta, and I don't mind playing more of that. That was just very enjoyable, but it looks like
it's just a fun game to play.
It is. It's one of those that, you know, you have a fun time playing it, and then you get all these upgrades, and you play through it again with all the upgrades, and it's a completely different experience.
Yeah.
You know, it's just such a fun game. It really is, especially if you're a huge fan of the Devil May Cry series. It's like that. It's really what, like, in my opinion, what Devil May Cry 4 should have been.
Yeah.
it really is. I mean, yeah. You know, if you play Devil May Cry, there's almost no comparison. Bayonetta just trumps it up and down.
Yeah. But, you know, that best trailer, I think going to the worst, no game, well, I won't say no game felt like the worst to me. Minecraft for Xbox.
Yeah, and I'll disagree with you on that. I think Minecraft, I mean, I can see your point. I think it's really been overplayed at this point. You know, they're releasing it seems for every single platform.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, that's a bit tiresome. But other than that, I mean, Minecraft is really a great game, and I think it really does deserve the recognition that it gets.
And I don't think I'm denying it. It's just that it's like, if that's one of your big games you're announcing, it's like, it's the same game, just importing it to another system.
Yeah,
and
I get your point. It's not really a game that you should be announcing as a feature of your new console, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, here's our new console, and guess what? It can play Minecraft! You know,
It's like saying, here's our Xbox One. It can play Solitaire.
Yeah, well, it's a little better than that, but
it's a little better than that, but
you know, I can't say that that's a selling point of a next-gen console.
Yeah.
Because the Xbox 360 can play Minecraft. You know, my 6-year-old PC can play Minecraft. That doesn't impress me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad that, you know, it's still getting more recognition, but it's just, you know, it's like, okay, great, it can play Minecraft. That doesn't really impress me.
Yeah.
So I get your point on that.
Conference, obviously, Microsoft, because it put everybody to sleep.
Yeah, I was very disappointed with Microsoft's conference, and in all honesty, I think Microsoft was probably very disappointed too. But they don't want to admit it.
They're never going to admit it.
No, absolutely not.
If we look at if things keep going the way they are, I think it's going to be, you know, Nintendo's going to be number two very easily behind Sony. I'm just basing that based off like towards gamers.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sony's going to be I think it's obvious, especially the way everybody's reacting. Sony will be printing money this holiday season, I think it's safe to say.
I think that they'll be selling the PlayStation 4 at a bit of a loss, but I don't think it'll take too long for them to recoup.
But they're going to be selling a lot of it, and it's like with their game lineup, they're going to be making a lot of money in 2014 off it.
My suggestion to Sony is make sure you have enough PlayStation 4s available. Don't make the same mistakes that you made with PlayStation 3 and only release, I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 200,000 or 300,000 units.
Yes. People died over that thing.
Yeah, don't.
That was sad.
Don't do that to your consumers to make them line up in line. Not that I would be caught dead in a line, though. I did actually line up for the Wii U. I actually went to the Target in Largo Mall. But I got there at like 7:25 a.m. and there were only 4 people ahead of me, and they had 15 consoles. But literally, like after I got there, 5 minutes later, huge line.
Yeah.
You know, about 20, 30 people just lined right up, and they handed us tickets. So, you know, not to say I don't line up for games, but I typically don't, and I probably won't line up for a PlayStation 4. Don't make your consumers have to line up in such a huge line.
Yeah.
That's not fair to your consumers.
There's only one game series or 2 game series I'll line up for. Mm-hmm. That is
Kingdom Hearts.
Kingdom Hearts and Final Fantasy.
Absolutely.
And I've done it, too. Mm-hmm. I remember being at both, I think it was the Kingdom Hearts 2 and the Final Fantasy 12 and 13 line parties at the GameStop in Largo Mall, for that matter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, definitely the worst. I think overall, though, E3 was very successful because there's a lot of buzz. You know, there's a lot of buzz. Microsoft, the big loser, but you know, there's a lot of buzz for Nintendo, a lot of buzz for Sony.
I think Microsoft has a lot of PR to do. They have a lot of PR repair. They you know, to me, a lot of the decisions they made really don't tell me that they want to keep any of their customers.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
it's like, you know what. I like Killer Instincts. Mm-hmm. You buy an Xbox One.
Yeah, and in all honesty, I'm not impressed with Killer Instinct so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not the Killer Instinct that was made by Nintendo and Rare. And
I only say it because that's like the only thing that really is Xbox. Like Metal Gear Solid 5, I like. It'll be on the PS4.
Yeah, that one I'm looking forward to.
Other games that I would possibly play are all going to be on the PS4. Mm-hmm. You know. And yeah, you can say the same thing about, you know, Kingdom Hearts 3 and Final Fantasy, but let's be honest, everybody's going to be playing that on the PS4. Mm-hmm. And I have no doubt that graphic-wise, I think the PS4 is going to be better than the Xbox One.
Right. I don't think the Xbox One's going to be a complete failure. I think you're still going to have that core audience that's going to buy the Xbox One. You know, you have plenty of people out there that, you know, love games like Forza and Halo. You're going to have the Halo crowd, you know, as soon as they release a Halo game, I think that's going to be a system seller for the Xbox One.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, you know, I've always seen the Xbox as the video game console for the PC gamer. Because really, that's what the Xbox has always done well. It has been basically the first-person shooter genre, and really the games that really were best on the PC. Mm-hmm. So.
Right, absolutely.
Well, I think we've covered E3 from front to back. Mike, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Tommy, thanks for having me.
Having a bit of nostalgia here. I know, of course, you don't have any website or blogs or podcasts that you do.
No, not at this point. I used to have a website called Who3.com. I wouldn't go visiting it because it's probably a malware site now, but I used to run that with a couple friends of mine. Shout out to Rowie and John, Zombie John. Gosh, remember Zombie John? Yeah, man, he was crazy. But other than that, you know, I've been thinking about starting a new video game blog, but you know, I just with my work and everything, I just really can't find the time. But I'll see what I can cook up.
Well, if you do, we'll be sure to, you know, as we call it in the podcast, and we'll pimp it out.
Very good.
with most unattractive term two. But and of course, guys, remember, check out, if you want to, first of all, email us, let us anything you want to know about E3. Remember, of course, you can always email us at absolution132, I'm getting my own emails just wrong, absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. that's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. you can find us on Facebook by searching for the Absolution Network, like us and leave us a comment there. And of course, you can always find the website, which at www.an.132productions.com. I'm a bit out of practice because I haven't done this in a couple weeks. With Anime Next and everything. And speaking of Anime Next, of course, I'm going to have stuff from Anime Next coming out in the coming weeks, both, you know, photo albums, hopefully a video. Of course, also check out the Otaku Momentum on the Absolution Network. Check out all the other 132 production sites, which includes the Shaft Plus podcast, which you can find at www.shaftplus.com. Gene and Chris are back talking about anime. The Tokyo SOS podcast, where I review every Godzilla movie ever made. I'm now in the final parts of the Millennium era with Mechagodzilla coming up. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, my comic book site, which I still run, which features Comic Book Crazy and Hexcast, the only podcast reviewing every issue of Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. And that is it for this episode of the Absolution Network featuring the E3 convention for 2013. For Mike, I am your Primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and until next time, my Toonami generation, it's gonna get too dangerous. Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.